Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, as I complained to you before we started, I'm a mess today getting going. But hopefully you're in better shape than I am.
Well, I have to be, right? Like, you're a hot mess this morning. There's a difference. I have to be better. And really, I mean, nobody cares. They're just like, okay, well, you guys are old and you're a hot mess. Start talking about football and let's get going here.
Exactly, Andy. Let's move on. My hot messness is irrelevant, so we can move on from there. I tell you what, it's kind of a slow news week as far as stuff's going on, but I do want to do the kind of show that we used to call our news and notes kind of days, just kind of little things from here and there. And let me start with this. I read a recent article that Nick Saban has said he thinks offenses in college football are due for another change. Remember how over the last several years, the game has been shifting to it's a speed game, not a size game. And, you know, multiple three wide receivers spread out. Defenses are reacting to that, putting more speed on the field. Sometimes two linebackers, five DBs. And offenses now may be going more to a power game. And it got me to thinking about this Penn State team and some of the things that we're hearing. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence, but it seems to be a lot of what we're hearing about this Penn State team kind of coincides with that theory. It feels like we're going to start seeing 2 and 3 tight end formations. We may even be seeing multiple running backs on the field. What do you think?
So I think Penn State is going to use its assets and hide its weaknesses. Now, you always want to do that. I'm not sure Nick's wrong, but I'm not sure he's right either. Does that make sense to me? So I will, and how I am going to explain that is, yes, I think Penn State's going to look to be a more powerful offense. I think they're going to use a lot of 12 and 13 sets, which is one running back, two tight ends, one running back, three tight ends. And you also might see some mix of 21 and 22 in there, right? With two running backs and a tight end, or two running backs and two tight ends. That's to cover up some potential or clear-cut weaknesses, but also use their strength. Come on, the strength of this offense is going to be, and I mean strength, you know, from play in and play out, is going to be the running backs and the depth there and the tight ends. They've got them. They're going to use them because they've got them. However, what they're trying to do is to actually take advantage of the greatest single asset they have, which is their quarterback, Rocco Beck. Not just the quarterback. He has what this offense will be set up so that he can attack vertically. They want to go down the field. They're almost going to be sort of, you know, using a shorter to maybe mid-range passing game and a running game so that he could set defenses up and get them, you know, moving laterally and sort of north and south. Don't know whether you're zigging or zagging. They're going to be at their best when they're able to consistently attack vertically down the field because they're able to use the power that they have inherently already. So, you know, I don't disagree with Nick at all. I'm not sure he's 100% right there yet. Like, we're not going to see 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I still think speed and the edges are going to matter, but I don't think it's going to be a Penn State offense this year in 2026 that attacks the edges as a primary goal. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, they don't have to get their wide receivers into space. They don't have to spread you all the way out. I think their primary bread and butter will be attacking you vertically and going down the field, because it's Rocco Beck's greatest asset as a quarterback. He's got a lot of strengths. He really does. He's everything you want in a seasoned veteran quarterback, but identifying coverages, finding the weak spot, and setting things up to do that and delivering a vertical punch, that's a huge strength of his, and I think that's what this offense will be built towards.
Well, I want to hit on Rocco Beck a little bit more, but just still expounding on this. Of course you do. It's the quarterback.
Well, of course.
We got to talk about him.
Make sure we go back to the quarterback. Of course we will.
Yes, and I don't know if you're patronizing me here when you're saying it that way.
I am. Jimmy, you are enamored with quarterbacks. You cannot stop talking about quarterbacks. You can't stop. We're not even talking about – we wouldn't even be talking about the quarterback position if I haven't brought in that Penn State strengths are going in it. Then you're like, okay, well, let's talk about quarterbacks.
All right. I got a question for you, Andy. I got a question for you.
Okay? It's the most important position on the field. Conceded.
Who was the best quarterback in the country last year?
Fernando Mendoza, by a mile. Wasn't even close.
By the way, how did his team do last year?
What time is nap time, Jimmy?
See, because I'm proving a point here, Andy. You go off on that. You know, you're trying to dodge the question. The best quarterback in the country led his team to a national championship.
Was Will Howard the best quarterback in the country the year before when Ohio State won it? Nope. Not even close. Not even close. So, punch, counterpunch. But inherently, Jimmy, you are correct. I am conceding the quarterback position is the most important. And now, as we know monetarily, it's the most valuable position on the field.
Let's go back to our regularly scheduled conversation. And, I think what and Nick Saban bringing this up, and it was just in an interview during the course of conversation. So it wasn't, a big dissertation on it, but I thought it was an interesting point. And it got me thinking more. Now, I think also this is like in many sports, it's the pendulum swinging the other way. You know, we've had so many years of speed kills. It's speed that wins games. And I think that creates opportunities where you get a smaller defense. You create mismatches. If there's a position that I love after quarterback, Andy, it's tight end. Because I think you could create mismatches with tight ends. You can create one of two situations happens. Either I've got a faster, more mobile tight end than a linebacker could cover, or a bigger, stronger guy than a defensive back could cover. And by having multiple tight ends out there, you can create some of those mismatches. And the great part to this, and I guess I'm conceding the point to you, which is a great one, this is a strength. They have multiple tight ends who can play the game. So why not use it? And again, I'll bring up a topic you don't want to talk about, but the wide receivers are at best unproven. So why not go to your strength, which is a tight ends?
They're unproven and mostly unknown. And they have a little bit of salt and pepper on them, but not nearly enough to be viewed as an asset in an offense. Not even close to enough to be viewed as an asset in an offense. You know, I think they're, when I said, you take your position of strength and cover up your potential or clear-cut weaknesses, Penn State clearly has a clear-cut weakness at wide receiver. That could be proved different over the course of 12 games, but let's just, It ain't going to change in a month, Jimmy. It ain't going to change in a month. It's going to be over 12 games. Are these receivers more than a clear-cut weakness? I think you have a potential weakness on the offensive line. You know, you've got the tight ends, running back, and quarterback to cover that up a little. I think that's a little less of a weakness potentially. But I think they have a clear-cut weakness at wide receiver and a potential weakness in spots on the offensive line, but not overall on the offensive line.
See, Andy, I want to both agree and disagree with you at the same time. At wide receiver, it's been every year they change it over, new coach, and every year I say, Andy, you don't know that they're not going to be good because it's a different set of receivers. It's a different coach, different era. And you keep being proven right every year. So I'm having trouble with this arguing the side of they're going to be any better this year. I will say it's unknown. I really don't know. I mean, there's a
weakness. It's a weakness. Not known is a weakness.
Okay. I'll take that. Although I will tell you, the other night I was in State College, we did a show at Pine Grove Hall, which, by the way, what a great place, Andy. It's very, very well set up, great menu, great bar, all that stuff. Anyway, one of the players that we had as a guest was Zay Robinson. He's a redshirt freshman, came over from Iowa State. Being a good interview doesn't necessarily translate into being a good wide receiver, but boy, am I rooting for that kid. We've heard a lot of good things about him. He's a fun guy. He talked about, you know, he wants to be explosive. That's his goal out there. And he's one of the many unknowns out there, but someone I'll be rooting for, you know, hopefully
can root for him. Clear cut weakness.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's the couple Iowa receivers that came over, but there's also a couple of promising young guys. This Zay Robinson is one. Kobe Howard is another one who's, you know, the Penn Stater. Anyway, Andy, in this whole discussion about being bigger, more physical, is that what we're going to see at Penn State? The other part, and you only alluded to it, is the offensive line. So when we come back right after this break, I want to talk to you about that and the role they will play in this offense that Penn State, as we are talking about, tight end heavy, running back heavy. We'll do that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. This is quarter number two of our show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football. And Andy, in the first quarter, I mentioned Nick Saban talking about college football offenses or just the whole game itself changing a bit. Maybe the pendulum will shift a little bit. It's gone so deep into speed, smaller guys, faster guys. You need that. Offenses are spread out, you know, 3-4 wide receivers. Then you get the smaller defenses to cover that. And he's thinking, hey, maybe the pendulum will be shifting. We're going to see more power running. We're going to see more tight ends. And I thought that Penn State, from everything we're hearing, kind of fits that mold. And you made the great point that it's not just a trend. It's where Penn State's strengths are.
Yeah.
They have good running backs. They have good tight ends. They have questionable wide receivers. But where this all starts, though, Andy, is up front. It's with the offensive line. They've got to be ready. So does that also change with this kind of game? Do you think we're going to see a difference in this offensive line style in any way from years past?
Nope. I don't think the offensive line – look, they always say everything starts in the trenches, right? If this offensive line stinks, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if you have three Heisman Trophy candidates at wide receiver, running back, and quarterback. If your offensive line stinks, Houston, you got problems, right? So if they stink, it's irrelevant. They can't, as long as they don't stink, they're not going to be part of the solution for Penn State's offense. They are not going to be what this offense needs to get going. There are teams that have offensive lines that have the experience, the talent, and the capabilities to drive the ship, right? This isn't Penn State's offense. It's not a strength, but it's also not a clear-cut weakness, Jimmy. It could be in spots, but you look at the right side, right? Right side is good. Two options at center. Both of them have some salt and pepper on them. Left side, new and young. There's your potential, right? Does that come in? Do they have enough of a depth to absorb an injury? They just have to be average because they're clear-cut. They have clear-cut strengths. Tight ends, running back, and the quarterback are strong enough to carry the load to how this offense will want to function, to be functional and explosive. That's the thing. The end game is they want to burn you, and they want to beat you long, and they want to be explosive and fast. They're going to use strength to do that, to hit you. So that means the offensive line has to be good, not great. Average at best. Fine. They can't be the problem. And that's on any team. But if they're a weakness, they emerge as a clear-cut weakness after six games for Penn State, getting to seven wins is going to be difficult because it won't matter. But I don't see the problems here. I don't see a powerhouse offensive line, but I also don't see, you know, an offensive line full of turnstiles and greenhorns, right? Like, so it's a potential problem, but they just are going to be asked to be average or good. I really feel strongly that there's enough around them to make that sort of, you can cover it up. Let's just call it what it is.
Well, in that covering it up, I think this is where, Andy, that experienced quarterback. And there's no quarterback in the country more experienced than Rocco Beck.
Correct.
He's done and seen it all. And a lot of times it's about recognizing things as the quarterback, right? If recognizing that a blitz is coming, where, you know, if one of those guys comes in untouched, everyone will quickly blame the offensive line, when it's really the quarterback. If he had recognized it was coming, he could go to the outlet receiver. He knows it's coming, get rid of the ball quickly. That's where I'm 100% in agreement that experienced quarterback can help you out.
So I want to point out one thing that's like sort of deep inside football. So, and I'm not, this isn't a Drew Aller problem. Just for example, last year, to give Penn State fans out there a little perspective, Drew Aller is making checks and calls that are geared towards the skill positions, right? When he's barking and making checks and calls. Then you hear the center, which was Nick Dawkins. He's making checks and calls. Those are for the offensive line. Rocco Beck is so experienced, and he'll have a bit of a greenhorn center. He'll make his checks and calls for his skill players, but then they'll also have checks and calls. He'll be calling a little bit of both. He'll also be telling the offensive line what to do at times, and probably on a fairly consistent basis. So be a communication between him and center to tell the center, and then the center makes his checks off of that. It won't be the center on an island. Rocco's so experienced and so savvy as a quarterback that he sort of has that ability to nuance and to run the entire thing, not just one phase of the offense when it comes to making checks and calls.
Well, and it's also obviously that's important pre-snap, what he's doing, how he'll recognize what the defense is doing. But it's also post-snap, Andy, the making the correct read. Understanding, and this was one of the things I think young quarterbacks really struggle with, is sometimes it's just a matter of living to fight another day. You know, don't throw an interception. Don't be a hero. Don't just throw the ball away. Sometimes, as you know, coaches will say, a punt is a good result.
Yeah. It's not about the 20 throws you can make that work out. It's about what's the decision you make that five times it doesn't, right? When you get beat on the call, or your guy gets beat in a spot, or it doesn't go as you thought it would go, you know, those five or six critical times, what is the decision you make? What do you do? And those actually are way more important at times, and especially in big games. Hence, ding, 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 the Drew Aller problem. It wasn't the 20 right decisions he'd make that were easy to see and everyone could make them. It was that four or five decisions a game where it was in that tight spot, he couldn't get them right. It's what Rocco does in the moments where it goes sideways for him. Not like momentum in the game, but I'm like inside the game on the field, like, nope. Just tossing that away. My guys get beat. I'm not going to try and scramble, put the ball in jeopardy. Tuck it away. I'm taking the sack. You know, those kind of things. Like, what are those five, six decisions a game? What do they look like?
You know what, Andy? What? We have to talk some golf always. It's kind of analogous in golf. Make your next shot easier than the current one. Don't get yourself in deeper trouble.
Here's a great one for golfers. So you hit a crappy shot, right? We do. We're amateurs, right? And even if you hit it in a hazard and you're out of play and you're taking your drop, what is your next one? If you're in trouble, what's your next option? Is it red light, yellow light, or green light? Right?
Yep.
Is it red light? Oh man, I'm pitching out sideways. I see a little narrow window. No, red light.
Don't be a hero.
Get out. Okay, yellow light. I see a spot. Is it worth the risk? And green light's like, oh my gosh, I hit this crappy shot and look, I'm fine. So yes. I think red light, yellow light, green light really works well for at least it does for me when I'm in trouble. Like what am I gonna do? What do I see? And I'm like, oh no, that's, you don't be uber aggressive, but you're always looking to make the best shot. But it's red light, green light, yellow light. Works in football.
Well, I look at it with my golf game. If I hit a bad shot, I say, you know what? That may have cost me a stroke. Don't make it a two-stroke bad shot. Make sure it's just a one-stroke bad shot, Andy. Yeah. And that, I think, is the analogy to, you know, playing the quarterback position. Don't make it worse. Don't make it worse. Punt and live to play another down. Now, this leads me to, and you've pointed this out with Rocco Beck, with all the experience he has, that is probably his best asset, Andy. The fact that he's so experienced and the ability to make decisions as an experienced quarterback. It just leads me again to a quarterback conversation. But again, it's reaching the point, Andy, that it seems like all the best teams are saying, you know what? We don't need a freshman quarterback that we teach and let him go through the growing pains elsewhere. We'll bring him in. Indiana, Cignetti's been there now. This is going to be his third year in a row. He just brings in a transfer quarterback to be his guy. He wants an experienced quarterback and let somebody else deal with teaching him.
That's today there's going to be a lot of learning and conversation around that. And Rocco Becks, he's the most experienced. And yeah, how can you not say it's his asset? I'm going to disagree with you, Jimmy. I think his greatest asset as a quarterback is his ability to find the weakness or the gap in a defense and get that ball down the field to the right guy. Vertically, I think he's as capable, like he doesn't have like Drew Aller arm talent, but he has that knack that I think Penn State never had in the James Franklin era. Never had it. Never had the quarterback that could do it like this, that had the salt, pepper, seasoning, and moxie that you're talking about, the ability to do that, see that, and have enough arm talent to deliver it. And I don't mean just throwing a 60-yard bomb. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about explosive vertical pass game. And I think that's his greatest weapon and his best asset overall.
All right. I'll accept that, Andy. But see, now you got me all excited to see Rocco Beck play. I can't wait for the fall and to see him actually on the field. All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number two. Next up, your favorite segment where we take the listeners' questions and we ask Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, and we all know what that means. It's time for you to take over the show. It's your questions we're going to ask Andy. And Andy, we always end up talking a little bit about golf. So how about I get the golf question out of the way first?
Oh,
and
I love it.
Well, I'm not I'm not sure I'm going to love this first question, but I'm curious to hear how you're going to answer it. This is Jason from Arlington. He says, Andy, we've been getting golf talk about your game. Since you did golf with Jim, how about an assessment of his game? Yeah. I wasn't sure if I should put that out there. I didn't really want to, but I felt obligated to.
So, Jim loves the game. Loves it. He doesn't hit it very far. He's a averaged to slightly barely above average putter. Okay, so here it is. He's not bad off the tee. His iron game is atrocious. He has one chip, but from 50 to 75 yards, he's pretty good at getting it on the green, right? His proximity to the hole isn't great. I'm just going to do it short and sweet. He gets it on the green, though. Like, he's not firing chili peppers up you-know-what's butt. So in that range, like 50, 60, 65, 75 yards, pretty good. Get him outside 100 in the real score, 100, 160, hot dumpster fire of a mess. But putting, pretty good. Can get the job done. He only has one chipping, though. He only chips. You kind of only chip one way, right, Jimmy? Like, you have your chipping, and you use it everywhere. And please, God, no bunkers. Right?
Which I think makes me the average golfer.
You hate
in a bunker.
You almost suck in a bunker when it first lands in there. You're like, oh God, it's in the bunker. It's like you're almost defeated before you even step down in there and take your swing. But the poor bunker player is a result of having one chipping method. The one chipping method works. You don't hosel it. You don't get the yips. Sometimes you blade it, but you generally speaking, it works for you, the one. So you're like, I got one that works. There's no other way I'm going to add these shots to this. No way, which is very average golfer. So hits it pretty straight, doesn't hit it far off the tee. Iron game's just not very good. And he's got a strength between 50 and 75 yards of getting it on the green, and he's not a bad putter at all.
I will take that assessment. Okay. Very average golfer in many ways. But I'll tell you what I think is my best strength, Andy, in the game. I know my game. I know my limitations. Yeah. And there's a lot of golfers who do not know their limitations. Fair point. Let's move on. Here's another dangerous question, but we're going to go with it anyway. John from Tyrone says, we're getting more and more media coverage about how Matt Campbell is changing things for the better culturally, the latest being an ESPN article. I don't know if you saw that, Andy. It talked about, Matt Campbell's open door policy. His office is on the second floor of Lash Building. And some players said, we've never even been on the second floor of Lash, let alone in his office. Okay, and the article really emphasized that I'm not even sure how subtle it was about throwing James Franklin under the bus. Okay, that's my commentary on the article. But here, getting back to John from Tyrone, his question is, were things under James Franklin as bad as they are being painted?
So, okay, endings are ugly, so let's not just talk about the end. Right? Because when does a divorce or a breakup or an end of a friendship ever, oh, that was beautiful and good, right? Like, endings are ugly. The end was ugly. So let's not talk about the end per se and strictly focus on that. It was different, right? There's more than one way, to make beef stroganoff. You can do it like six different ways, So it was different. It was effective in some areas, but it had severe shortcomings in others. And at the end of the day, it was marketing over meat. In other words, at times there was lipstick put on a pig. And when you scratch a little bit under the surface, that's yellow paint, not yellow primer. In other words, that's a fraud. It's a house of cards. And it was always about marketing, and it was always about one person. And it's just different. Matt inherently doesn't have narcissistic traits. He doesn't understand the concept of marketing over meat. In other words, the meat and potatoes are always going to matter more, and marketing is irrelevant. Not that it isn't, but if it comes down to a choice, he's going to go with the meat and potatoes because the marketing is irrelevant. As in James's case, James would always go for the marketing first because it doesn't matter what the meat and potatoes are. You can cover it up with marketing. So, it's just different. And there are gaps. His way is not yet in alignment with a blue blood powerhouse school. That is going to be his building block to all the good stuff you're hearing, right? Like how his culture is, who he is as a person, what his priorities are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of that. But can he do the job, right? He's got a blue blood under his thumb now, a lot of resources and assets, and has very high expectations. He needs to build as he continues to build this, that needs to become a higher priority over the establishing of the building blocks, the core values, what's important, what's relevant. Yeah, that's still always going to matter. But at some point, the switch has got to be flipped where, all right, you're a blue blood that's loaded with money with high expectations. Let's see. It's got to look like that. So that will be his challenge, but this is not hard for him because this is who he is.
Well, I'm going to both run Jerry Franklin over with the bus, and I'm also going to defend him. Okay, I'm going to work it both ways. First of all, Andy, I've personally experienced a different tone in the Lash building. Okay. But being there with James Franklin as head coach and being there with Matt Campbell, and that's not me interfacing with either one of those head coaches, but with the staffs. And I think the staff is a reflection of the head guy. Now, the thing with James Franklin and everyone, and it's always given as a criticism, he's a salesman, you know, and it's said in a negative sense, the snake oil salesman. Nice. The fact of the matter is, being a good salesman is a good talent to have. Hey, it's when you're recruiting players, you're selling something, okay? Being a good salesman. And we're now seeing, though, after time, just like in a relationship, we've all been in that relationship where we are enamored with someone, and after a while, it gets old, whatever, and you wonder, why was I so enamored when this began? And I really think of that whenever I see a Virginia Tech media, Virginia Tech fans talk right now. They are in that honeymoon stage. And they're essentially saying, you Penn State fans, what are you talking about? This is the greatest guy ever. How could you let him go? And the Penn State fans essentially are responding, get back to me in a couple years. We'll see how you feel. All right, let's get to Doug in Massachusetts. Speaking of the differences between the two coaches, Doug says, I'd like to think that Matt Campbell will be able to do much better in the big games than James Franklin. And then in parentheses, he says, doesn't he have to? But what evidence do we have that that is going to be the case?
Yeah, none. Not at this level. Absolutely nothing. Not at the level that these expectations are. That's the gap right now. Touch them all, Doug. You identified the sort of not going to be brought to the forefront during this feel-good honeymoon phase that Matt's earning, right? It's not being given to him. Let's be clear about that, Jimmy. Matt's earning this sort of, you know, good ship lollipop feel. He's earning it just by the way he's setting up, you know, sort of the bedrocks of the program and what the core values are and what's relevant and what the priorities are. And that's earned. But eventually, exactly what Doug's talking about is going to matter more than all of that. And while they're still going to be important and have some relevance, I wonder how long he gets. In my mind, it's 3 years. He's got this season, because it's new and the schedule's favorable. He's got next season because he's still going to be a little behind the eight ball because he had an entire recruiting class torpedo. So he's going to be in the same spin cycle. I think it's the 28th season where you get your first look at him outside the what you know as the Matt Campbell sort of ISU to PSU bubble. That's just my opinion. I think that's the year one of, all right, Matt, what's it look like when it's not just a shiny new toy and something that, you know, seems to be a square peg in a square hole, right? Like it fits. So it's going to have to fit at a much higher level in the very near future. But I think the very near future is the 2028 season as the launching / start point. That's just my.
You know, Andy, you accomplished the running out of the clock.
Thank you.
On this segment. So you know what's going to happen. I'm going to respond to your answer when we start quarter number four. Sorry. It's what I do, Andy.
All right.
That's it. That's it for quarter number three. We got lots more to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy, I'm Jim. And as promised, I'm going to respond to Andy's answer when Doug from Massachusetts asked about Matt Campbell. Has he shown, is there any evidence that has shown he will be better in the big games? And I kind of agree with him. Doesn't he have to be just by default almost because James was so bad in those games? But Andy, I have the advantage of seeing these questions ahead of time. So I went and took a look at Matt Campbell's record, or has he won any big game, beaten any top 10 teams? And I found four different times where he's done it. He beat a number four TCU team. He beat, maybe most impressively, he beat a number two ranked Oklahoma team, which, by the way, finished that year ranked number three in the country. So, you know, that's a pretty solid win. He beat a number eight ranked Oklahoma team that ended up finishing number six in the country. He also beat a number 10 ranked Oklahoma State. So he has beaten top 10 teams. And I would say any multiple wins against top Oklahoma teams. Oklahoma is a team that, you know, has it, they're a, if not a blue blood, very close to one, and you know that they have more talent than Iowa State does. Not saying that's a guarantee of anything, Andy, but it sure is helpful.
Okay.
Okay. I was waiting to see if you had something to say about it. Let's move on, Andy. In our earlier segments, we were talking about size matters on the offensive side of the ball. A bigger, more physical team, that would Matt Campbell be playing, especially multiple tight ends, two and even three tight ends? Might we see multiple running backs? But this is not just a conversation about the offense. It's also about defense. And it's a real concerted effort that was made to have much larger tight ends. I'm sorry, defensive tackles. It's a much bigger defensive line that we are going to see.
Yeah, it's just a different priority. That's all it is, Jimmy. Right? Matt Campbell has a defensive philosophy, and his what he will be asking of his defensive coordinator will be, here, I don't want that long, lean, athletic, you know, twitchy inside guy. I'm more about, you know, boulders than pebbles, right? Let's just call it that way. There's no, so this is what I'm going to give. This is what you're going to get to work with. It's just a different philosophical thing. It's not like, oh, it's a trend or this is what they got. It's just going to be, that's going to be a difference at Penn State. They're still going to need to do a lot of the same things. They're still going to need to be, you know, they're still going to need to make sure that they have, you know, good gap retention. They're still going to need to bring pressure and create pocket impact up the middle, Jimmy. Can 325 boulders consistently provide honorable and real pocket impact up the middle of the field, tackles for losses? Can they take a, you know, a delayed reverse trap with a double pull on the back end, recognize it, understand it, keep their gap retention, and come up with a 2-yard tackle for a loss. Athletic guys can do that easier because they're twitchy and they get themselves in and out of spots quicker. So it's just a different baseline to work from. The outcome kind of has to look the same. I feel it's two different cars that have to end up in the same city. One coming from the west, one coming from the east. It doesn't matter which direction you come from. You got to end up kind of at the same spot. And this is a different direction for Penn State defensively, for sure, 100%.
What I found fascinating, Andy, is I got to talk with linebacker Cam Smith the other night at one of our events, and I asked him about differences in philosophy with a new coaching staff in playing linebacker. And it was an interesting answer to the question. And he said he really likes what they're doing this year because at linebacker, they are going to be more aggressive, more charging forward, and it's the defensive line's job to occupy people. So at linebacker, instead of being passive and sitting back, they will be aggressive and going forward. And in the conversation, it was really interesting when, you know, I asked him about, you know, the difference in size at the defensive line. His comment was, yeah, I noticed that, you know, they were bringing in these big guys to play defensive tackle, but I didn't really put it together till we started having spring practice and the philosophy difference. And he said, oh, okay, now I understand why they're bringing that size in.
Jimmy, their linebackers are the strength of this defense, bar none. It's not even a topic up for debate or legitimate conversation. These linebackers are going to be all over the field. You might even see, Jimmy, three defensive linebacker and a linebacker up on the defensive line. You know, three legitimate. Yeah. You're going to see these linebackers mixed, matched. They're going to play a lot of snaps. I think they're going to use probably four of them on a consistent basis on a mix and match, and they are going to be in a myriad of different formations and setups. They are going to be all over the field because they are the linchpin, the kingpin, the strongest asset. They're arguably, I would say, probably three of the four, maybe five best. Outside, I would say probably three of the four best players on defense are linebackers. So they're going to do a lot of anything and everything, and that's why you see sort of, you know, the player that you spoke with talking about occupying space, because they're going to use their assets to play fast. And you could see that from early on. So it's just going to be a difference, and it's going to be about what does, you know, DC Lynn do to make these linebackers the thoroughbred weapons that they show the potential to be. And that's going to be a real key for this defense. They've got them all. They've got a little bit of everything, Jimmy. There isn't a piece of the puzzle you wouldn't want in a college linebacker room that Penn State doesn't have this year.
Well, I'm in agreement that, you know, the linebackers could be a real strength. When you say they're, you know, maybe three of the top four defensive players are linebackers, I think there's some DBs that might disagree with you on that point.
Yeah, come on, bring it on. I'll talk to them about it. Show me your Quan, and I'll show you their Quan, and then we'll talk.
Well, I think, you know, Darius Dixon is pretty good. I think Marcus Neal's pretty good.
I gave him one.
Zion Tracy is pretty good.
Jimmy, I gave you one, and it ain't a defensive lineman. We already know that. Eliminated all of them, every single one of them. In a preseason mode, gone. So you're talking about, I said maybe five. Maybe two other guys, but they're at least two of the three best players.
Well, I think we're in agreement, though, that both the linebackers and DBs are more of the strength of the defense rather than the defensive line. I did want to ask you about a comment you made, And boy, this is again being the old man moment here, Andy. I think this was in our conversation yesterday that you and I always talk about things the day before we record. And you, I was asking you about, this is the third defensive coordinator in 3 years. Yeah. And I asked you about, you know, what were they accomplishing in the spring versus what do they have to accomplish going forward? And I thought you gave a real fascinating answer to the question, which was, you know what, Danton Lynn probably spent a good part of the spring just figuring out what he had before he was going to implement what he needs to implement based on what he has there.
Yeah, you remember Matt Campbell sort of tipped the hat a little bit, said we're taking when he talked about installs and putting, you know, baselines in a formation. We're taking that very, very slow. He doesn't have to do it on the offensive side. He's just talking about the defense because he's got the same OC and the same freaking quarterback, right? Okay, there's some newness there. He's got a running back,
and
a
wide receiver, and the same coordinator. Yeah,
and the same coordinator. He's talking about the defense. Slow, slow, slow. This is a blended family now, right? You've got, and it's a new DC, so it's even more blended. It's, you know, you've got, yeah, it's the third DC, but I think it was, okay, we've got the Iowa State guys, we've got the Penn State guys, we've got the defensive tackles that came from a little bit from UCLA, so, you know, Colorado, et cetera, et cetera. I have an experienced linebacker that I can watch tape on here at Penn State, but he's not going to be available in the spring. I think he spent this thing, and I think it was paramount for him to know, I'll figure out, okay, this is what I have, start. But also, okay, this is what I don't have, right? And I think that was his entire spring. This is what I have. This to help what you have and what you don't have as a DC, it helps you start painting pictures in your head of what you want to, like, make your – what your active install and what you're going to try and accomplish. I think he spent the entire spring in that evaluation mode so that he can spend the summer – beginning to understand what he wants to begin with and hit the ground running with. I don't think your active installs in any way, shape, and form starts until the fall, Jimmy. Now, they might have put some baseline stuff in place, some very simple, rudimentary baseline stuff to allow them to practice effectively. But in terms of an active install, stuff that they might use starting in September, October, November, for example, none of that's going to be going in until September or until August, excuse me.
One last point I want to make, and you mentioned this, it's a blended family. One of the things in doing these events where I getting to interview players, and it's been over about the last 2 months or so doing it, from before spring practice to after spring practice, and it is a question that we've asked. Tell you what, the tone has changed already, where it seemed like a relevant question before spring practice. It doesn't feel like a relevant question anymore. Correct. The players, it's now one family. It's not a blended family anymore, which I think is good news, Andy. All right, that's going to have to be it. That's the final note. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first-of-its-kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.